while it looks like they're getting the kids all tucked away in place, I want to say a great big welcome to you. If you are new to Hillside, welcome. We're so glad you found us. That's not an easy task, is it? We like to say, we really want really intelligent people here at Hillside. So we've tucked ourselves away, so you have to be really smart to find us. You know, or as I tell other people, we're really easy to find the second time. So so if you're a guest, welcome. We are delighted. We're really honored. You could be a lot of things right now, places you could be. Like if you're a teenager, you could be in bed, right? I always got to commend I've got three daughters, you know, and my, of course, Stephanie, you know, 14. It's like, you know, just to make it here. They could be an atheist, but if they could get their body here, I mean, that's a big step spiritually, right? So, but some of you maybe are morning people. I don't know. I did not really inherit much of those. But here's the good news, and I know you've all been very worried about this. You know, I coach soccer. This is my 17th season coaching soccer. Been doing that. I started when I was 12. I wish. But anyway, we're in a tournament this weekend, and just as we were doing our greeting, Stephanie just texted me because I have my assistant filling in this morning, and she said, "We're undefeated. We're going to the championship." So there we go. So, that is certainly no reason of mine. That's for sure. I just inherited some really great girls. But anyway, so kind of fun. So I'll be rushing out here for a 3:20 championship game, and then we'll. See how that goes. So we've had some of you have been coaches. You've done that where I've had those seasons where, you know, it's like you just beg to score. You don't even worry about winning. You just like just to be able to get one in the, you know. So, but anyway, well, I'm glad you're here. We're starting a brand new series. And to help us get just a start on this topic, I'd like to have a little word association game or just kind of a little quiz or questioning thing. All right. So everybody knows what American is, right? What's an American? All right. Everybody knows what an Egyptian is. Everybody knows what a Canadian is. Everybody knows what a comedian is. Right? All right. But now here's a question. What's a Christian? What is a Christian? Interestingly, if we were to divide you up into groups, and maybe we have divide you up in groups of 10, and ask you that question, you guys were to talk about this question. What is a Christian? You may come up with 10 different answers, maybe 8 different answers or so forth. And it's if somebody walked up to you on the street and they said to you, "Are you a Christian?" Now, some of you would say yes, just flat out. Some of you say, "Well, what do you mean?" Some of you would say, you know, "Yes, but," or some might say, "No, but," and some of you might say, "Hey, I am, but I'm not part of that group," right? And we can think of any particular number of groups, right? For some of you, and let me just say, for those of you who are guests, I put usually a little listening guide in to be able to fill out some things if that helps you. I'm just ADD enough that I like something to fidget with, and, you know, so that's why I give that to you if you like to fill this in. It might be helpful as well. This is going to be a great series to bring people who maybe are not familiar with Christianity, maybe some people who have been disillusioned, maybe some people who have been hurt. This is a great series to bring your friends and your family to. But right there at the beginning, that first little point there. For some of you, what did that mean when you talked about becoming a Christian? For some of you, maybe number one, maybe you prayed a prayer, okay? That's the tradition I was raised in. Some of you were told, you're a Christian now because you've been baptized. As you got older, your family told you don't remember it, but you're a Christian because you got baptized. I know you were really little, but you don't, you know. Some of you were told that now that you finished a class, you went through a confirmation. Now you're a Christian, right? And we've all got those different views. Whether you prayed a prayer, whether you've been baptized, gone through some kind of ritual, gone through some class, or whatever, got a confirmation, you've been told or felt or thought, okay, hey, I'm a Christian because I have done this. And some of you were raised in traditions, and you were basically taught this. This is what you were taught. You were taught your brand is the true brand. Right? Let's say many of you were raised Catholic, for example. You know, you're taught you're the church. And if somebody mentions the church and you're Catholic, you go, that would be us, right? And I don't know about those other people, but we're the church and we're the true brand. Those of you who are raised Protestant, you say, wait, that's not fair. That's arrogant. We're part of this whole thing too. They think they're the church. They're not. We're just part of it. But you know, we're all a part of the church. So from birth to age 10, basically. We attended a Presbyterian church off and on. After that, I was raised Baptist. And of course, Baptists know they're right. We are the right Baptists. They're the true Baptists. And you know how we know we're right? Here's how we know we're right. We had Sunday night services. I mean, right? Those Episcopalians and Presbyterians, they had morning and no night service. So, their buildings were dark on Sunday night, but boy, we were the real brand because we were Baptists, right? my point is, depending on how you were raised, you might have different feelings about what's the real brand, of Christianity, and some of the you're a real brand. A lot of religions will say that, cults will say that, so forth, but. There's also something that we'll say more relationally. Different people coming from different perspectives. What would some people say when you're thinking about this relationally? One thing that people might say is they might say, well, I was a Christian, but I'm not anymore. I was raised a Christian family. When I was a teenager, went forward in a revival service. I said come some kind of little prayer. They told me, they scared me to death because they told me some car crash story. So it freaked me out because I thought I was going to die the next day. So I went forward, prayed this little prayer. And so for a while, I was a Christian, but nah, not really anymore. Then there's a group who would say, oh no, there's no such thing as was a Christian. Okay, right? Because once you're a Christian, always, yeah, you got it. Yeah, you heard. Okay. Once you're a Christian, always a Christian. There's no such thing as was a Christian. But some of you say, oh, yeah, there's a was and not, because you were raised and taught, you became a, if you could, you become a Christian, and then you look back, and you remember maybe being 16, coming home from a date, and where some not-so-Christian things may have happened, you're a non-Christian, doing some non-Christian things, and on your way home, you're driving 5 miles under the speed limit, because you were told that if you were killed in a car crash, you'd split hell wide open, and you'd be right there, so you go home, and you're petrified, and you get down on the side of your bed praying, and God, please, I know I lost it, I had it, but I know I messed up, so please, I want to be a Christian again. And then there's this big sigh of relief till next weekend. Because we live in that constant state, you ask yourself, am I or aren't I? In fact, some of you were raised in a tradition where you had to pray, where you prayed a prayer to become a Christian. And some of you, you say, wow, because of life or whatever, I prayed it 100 times. And, it's kind of like, taking Tylenol or Motrin. You're kind of waiting for it to kick in, It's just like, okay, this pain's going to go away. Pray again or whatever. A third thing that I want to point out too, kind of from a different angle, is this. Many times people think that being a Christian is all about what you believe. Okay? It's what you believe, right? Then there's others that would say, no, it's not just about what you, it's about how you behave. That's what makes you a Christian. It's interesting. Here's the term we use all the time, and yet, and many of us would say we associate ourselves with it. I would be one of those. And yet, there are all of these different approaches. And there's people who, if they're honest, would say, well, I hate Christians. I hate anything that has the word to do with Christian. That is repulsive to me. In fact, I want to give you what some of your friends, maybe even family members, this is kind of their definition, their popular definition of Christian. And some of you perhaps have had people say what they feel like Christians are. But look at this definition. This is basically, what some people would say. This is what you Christians are, okay? Christians are judgmental, homophobic, moralists, who think that they are the only ones, right? The only ones going to heaven, and that secretly they relish the fact that everyone else is going to hell. That's a Christian, right? Well, we know that. But don't you have people? And you may not feel that way, but don't you know people who do? I've got friends who feel that way. And if you don't feel that way, certainly, again, you know people who do. And every once in a while, no matter how you were raised, it's like, you know, the preacher or the pastor or whoever was teaching or whatever, you know, you look at that and you think that's kind of stern, but you know, sometimes it kind of touches on that, you know, things like that. You might think, you know, wow, that's some of the things he preaches on are kind of heavy. You know, we talk about guardrails, talk about different things like that. That's why if somebody walked up to you on a street, which they probably wouldn't, right? Yeah, I probably never had this happen. But if somebody walked up and said, are you a Christian? You might say, well, qualify that. Or can I qualify it with my answer? You know, can I answer it in a certain way, not just yes or no? I'm just, you know, sort of, you know, somewhere. Now, the good news is, and the bad news is, first, the good news, none of what we just talked about is described anywhere in the Bible as being a Christian, all right? Now, the bad news is this, is that probably much of what you've been taught about being a Christian and thought about being a Christian isn't biblical at all. It's wrong. And I'm going to show you how, you know, so I'm glad you're here. I'm really, really glad you're here. I want us to help you. And some of you, the series is not designed to put you in a panic, all right? Some of you, as we go through this, you're going to say, boy, you know, maybe the first time you're going to say, boy, some of you, are going to say, David, you're wrong. And you're going to go home and you're going to get your Bible out, you know, and you're going to open it up. And by the way, if I can get you to open your Bible, then I feel like the whole morning was a success. But you know, you're going to open up and say, wait, we got to find this out. Or I'm going to Google some of this. I'm going to find out what's he really, really saying. There's no way in the world what that guy told us is the truth. Or some of you are going to call up a real pastor. I know, I've been here 24 years, but you're just like, no, we gotta find somebody who really knows the Bible, because this you know, this just can't be, you know, what really is up. So some of you may call a priest, some of you, you know, you say, forget it, I'm not gonna come back at all. But I hope you will. I hope you'll come back for this series. It's really I just felt so impelled and so strong for us to talk about this, and I hope that you catch that. Let's talk about this word, Christian, because it's used in a lot of different areas. I mean, I've heard people tag Christian onto American. I've heard people tag Christian on, you know, to being conservative or whatever. It has Christianity, first of all, in all its derivatives, Christianity, singular, plural, whatever, it only appears three times in the Bible. Okay? Take the whole entire Bible, it only appears three times. Now, what's also interesting about the word Christian is it's never defined. The word Christian is never defined in the Bible. Now, we know that the word literally means little Christ. that's what it means. But in fact, what we're going to discover today is that term number three, that Christian's actually a derogatory term. The people who are outside the Jesus community use that to describe the Jesus community. And what's interesting is the Jesus community, whatever we want to call that, the Jesus community never used it to describe themselves. They never called themselves Christians. If we were followers of Jesus back then, we would not call ourselves that. It was a derogatory. It was like, you know, deadhead or geek or redneck. No, actually, it was worse than that. We have derogatory terms, and I don't want to offend anybody, so I'm not going to say them. But for different races, for Asian Americans, for Hispanic people, for African American people, there are some really derogatory things that are very insightful. That's more like what this word Christian was. It was a very derogatory term, and so it was really bad. So just think about those terms being referred to with these groups. People on the outside would look at the group of people and they'd say, wow, they all act the same way. They kind of live the same way. They have the same habits. They kind of dress the same. You know, they listen to the same music. You look at this whole group and you say, wow, this is, you know, that's who they are. Those people are, you know. And it could be stereotypical, but it was also very accurate. They were doing something that really would be consistent with that name. And then eventually all the people came up with this term. It's like, yeah, you're one of those. And they came up with this term, and that's actually how the term Christian developed. That's why it's only used three times in the whole New Testament, and all three of those, or when you read them, are obviously outsiders are using those terms to describe this group of people who are acting the same way and following the same person. So I want to show you an example of that. In fact, the verse describes it best I found in Acts. The book of Acts describes what happened after Jesus left. Acts is a manuscript, puts together the whole Bible. Acts is one of those. We call it a historical book. It's the only historical book in the New Testament, though everything else is historically accurate. It really tells us how the church got started. In this particular portion, one of the things that happened is after Jesus left, a persecution in Jerusalem broke out against the people. And they were called, they called themselves the followers of the way. Now, I don't know if this is because Jesus said he was the way, the truth, and the life or what, but this is what they did refer to themselves as, the followers of the way. And so persecution broke out, and these followers of the way, these Jesus freak people, scattered. Some of them went to a city in modern-day Turkey. Let me see if I can pronounce this correctly. Antioch, something like that. Antioch, our town is named after it. That's right. And it was a long way for people. It was all the way in Turkey. There's no correlation at all between the names, okay? So, yeah. But they got there and they started telling Jewish people and Gentile people, they started saying, hey, God's done an amazing thing. He sent his only son and he came there in Jerusalem and he was a man and he actually rose from the dead. They killed him, and he rose from the dead, and we saw him. And not only did we see him, we know other people who saw him. We know this happened. And so this spread. So a bunch of Greek-speaking, Roman-minded people in the city of Antioch embraced this new cult. And that's the way it was appeared to them, this little branch of Judaism, or branch off of Judaism, I guess you could say, So, this knockoff religion. And all of a sudden, a church got started in Antioch. Well, word got back to Jerusalem, where they were kind of the they. You always have a group of they. What do they think? They had a group of they back in Jerusalem. And, and the they of the church of Jerusalem, they were people like James, the brother of Jesus. Sidelight. How would you like that to happen? You're the brother of Jesus. Your mom's saying, why can't you be more like your brother? seriously. And we still do that. And of course, then you've got people that were friends of James going, hey, okay, tell me seriously. I mean, I won't tell anybody. He sins when he's at home, doesn't he? He does wrong stuff, doesn't he? Come on. I think James is one of our strongest arguments for the fact that Jesus is the Son of God. Because, you could fool people, go to church, go to work. But, your family, they know you. And the fact that James committed, followed, his brother, all that, how hard would it be to convince your brother or your sister that you're the Son of God? Okay? He was in truth. And I don't mean to do that, take that lightly, but, Kind of amazing thing. So anyway, in Jerusalem, you had Peter, you had John, you had Matthew, all of those guys. So they find out about this thing going on down in Antioch. And so they get one of their guys, Barnabas. And they say, Barnabas, I need you to go to Antioch and check this whole thing out. Is this the real deal? Is this some kind of weird little thing? They couldn't have gotten on the internet. They didn't have news like we've got it today. So they had to go check it out. So Barnabas goes to Antioch, a long way away, gets there, and there's so many of these followers of the way that he sends for reinforcements. He says, I can't cover all of this. So what he decides to do is he decides to get, who can I get that's a super follower of Jesus? So he gets, Saul, who eventually is called Paul, and who eventually writes a bunch of letters that make up the New Testament, as you know, planted a bunch of churches. So he says, and so Saul was visiting his hometown of, anybody know what Saul's hometown? Saul of? Tarsus, that's right. Good, little trivia. So Barnabas goes to Tarsus to find Paul, to bring him back to Antioch to be reinforcement for him, to kind of check this thing out. Because there were so many people there, so many of these followers of the way, they ended up staying there. And there's this little snippet of scripture that gives us an incredible insight into where the whole word Christian came from. So here's what happened. Look at Acts 11, 25, and 26. Got it printed for you? Or if that's distracting, or for you young people, if that feels too much like school, just watch here. All right, so here we go. Then Barnabas went to Tarsus, you know where Paul, to look for Saul, and when he found him, brought him to Antioch. So for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people. So all these Greek-speaking people embraced the message of Jesus in Antioch, and he taught great numbers of people. Then check out this next phrase. This is really amazing. This is Dr. Luke. Luke wrote Acts. Dr. Luke's recording all this. He's taking notes throughout this period of history. Here's what he says. The disciples were called Christians first at Antioch. The disciples were called by whom? By the people looking at this whole thing. Those Christians, you know. They were first called Christians, first in Antioch. That was a label put on them. Now, we get further evidence of this from a really, really fast-hitting piece of history that's not in the Bible. They'll sideline. How many of you are familiar with the Roman historian Tacitus? You know, just go ahead and raise your hand. It makes you look smart, right? Just, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, of course. Just reading him last night. Well, somewhere back in college, a little bit of high school, you read about Tacitus or maybe read a quote. And Tacitus wrote in the first century, died somewhere around 117 AD or late first century. He wrote primarily about four or five different emperors. And one of the Roman emperors he wrote about, in fact, a great deal of what we know about this Roman emperor actually comes from Tacitus. If you know much about him, and his name was Nero. Nero did extraordinary things, did something really, really extraordinary in 64 AD. He decided he wanted to start the city over. So he decided, since I wanted to start the city over, I'm going to burn the whole place down. So he burnt down Rome. And that, you know what, that made some people upset. Like everybody who owned a house or a business or anything like that had anything else in Rome. And so Nero was not really popular, so what does he do? He decides to, let's blame some people and say, I mean, it wasn't me. You know who it was? It was those lousy Christians. He blames the Christians, that's right. You know how you knew that? You knew that because of Tacitus, because of what I'm about to read from a little passage from Tacitus written in the late first century. Listen to how he describes this event. This is Tacitus, and here's what he says. He says, consequently, to get rid of the report, and that's the report being that Nero burned down his own city, Nero fastened the guilt and inflicted the most exquisite tortures on a class hated for their abominations. That's the way they were looked at. You know, Christians were looked at as abominations. They were called Christians. By who? By the populace. Again, Christians didn't call themselves Christians. Christians called themselves something else. The populace, the people, the outsiders looking in, they coined this term. And, bunch of Christians. The Tacitus goes on, and he just kind of defines at the end of this section a quote. He says, Christus, from whom the name had its origin. And he's making reference to that. He talks about in this quote, Pontius Pilate, one reference that we have about him, Pontius Pilate, in front of Jesus. Now, this is the really interesting thing, and I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I'm going to help you out a little bit here. You see, these Roman people were looking at this Jewish knockoff religion, and they kept hearing Christ, 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 you know, Christ, Christus, all the, they're hearing all of this. So they decided that that must just be Jesus' last name. Okay? Now, the Hebrews didn't have that problem, but they're just thinking it must be his last name. So, you know, there was different ones. There was James Christ and Mary Christ and, Jesus Christ. You know, there's a whole family of Christs. But the Jewish people knew, obviously, that Christ isn't a last name. It's a title. Sometimes when you're reading the New Testament, you'll see Jesus the Christ, right? Hebrew people understood that. The Greek word, it's talking about the Messiah. That's what that word means. The Hebrew word for Messiah, translated into Greek, is where we get Christ. because there were these Greek-speaking people, because the church was growing in this Greek-speaking world. They didn't talk about a Messiah. They weren't looking for a Messiah. Why would they look for a Messiah? They're not Jews. But, because the Greeks weren't waiting for that. So they just talked about Christ. And what's this Christ? We worship Christ. They heard Jesus, and sometimes they heard it together. So just first and last name. So as foreigners listened to all that, well, maybe that's his name. So the whole movement was named after, really, the word Messiah. That's why I was so glad you were saying that song. That was a brand new song, that last song, Jesus Messiah. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, I love this song. And boy, it works so well here. So the whole movement was named after, really, the word Messiah, from whom the name had its origin. Now, this is interesting. For those of you who think the Bible is like this isolated, thing, it's interesting, this quote. Christus, from whom the name had its origin, suffered the extreme penalty. I'm reading further in the quote. I don't have it all up there. Christus, from whom the name had its origin, suffered the extreme penalty under the reign of Tiberius, which is what the New Testament says, that Tiberius was the emperor of Rome during the time of Jesus and the end of his life, at the hands of one of our procurators, Pontius Pilate. And in other translations, it says Pontius Pilate. And there it is. That's Roman history, okay? Now, those of you who don't like history, you think, when is he going to get all this history stuff? Have to set all of this up for you to really understand, that in Roman history, written in the first century, said, oh, yeah, let me tell you about something out in Judea. You know that place where there's really always trouble and where there's that guy who stirred up trouble? But Pontius Pilate took care of that, put him to death. This is one of the few, in fact, one of the really only clear examples from history that Jesus was actually crucified and put to death by Pontius Pilate. A lot of history tells that he was put to death, but not specifically tying that in. Now, the point of all this is this. These were outsiders looking at a movement, trying to come up with a name for it, and they called the people Christians. Christians didn't call themselves Christians. They called themselves by a far more terrifying term. Something that was terrifying because it was so well defined. Far more disturbing, far more convicting than Christian. And one of the reasons that you can't get sometimes five people to define the word Christian the same is because of all the facets of Christianity. Because of, it isn't clearly defined in the Bible. There's knockoffs and spinoffs and religions of Christianity. And one of the reasons you get people on both sides of just about every issue. Think about it. You could take a political issue, moral issue, whatever. You get Christians on both sides of these. Why is that? The reason is because there's so many denominations or whatever. The reason we can't get along is because Christian and Christianity not defined in the New Testament. Now, you can be a Christian and believe and do just about anything, and nobody can go to the Bible and go, aha, see? It says right there, Christians don't do that. Christians should and Christians shouldn't, because the New Testament doesn't say anything about Christians except the verses I just read, that they were called Christians. The one time Peter talks about being persecuted as a Christian, outsiders were looking at them. That was the focus of them. And one time Paul's on trial, and the king that he's giving his case to, he goes, you're trying to make me one of those Christians, aren't you? And it was a derogatory term. When you look at the New Testament, the Gospels, the book of Acts specifically, there is a term, again, that is used to describe these people that were part of the Jesus movement. It's terrifying. It's the term disciple. You say terrifying, we hear that all the time. Why was that a terrifying term? Here's why it's terrifying. Here's why it should disturb you. Because it's so clearly defined. People don't argue about what it means to be a disciple. They may argue about discipleship curriculum, but actually the end goal, there's no argument. We know what it is. Bible clearly. And we can hide behind Christianity all day long. You can go. People go to war in the name of Christianity. People have argued. You can do all kinds of things. You can define it, redefine it, misdefine it, undefine. It's all these kinds of things you can do with Christianity. But I'm telling you, you lock into this word, disciple, open your New Testament, and it's just so extremely clear. A few examples. The one we just looked at from Acts 11, remember this thing, just think about the significance of this word now. And that Acts 11:26. The disciples were called Christians. The disciples were first called Christians at Antioch. If you'd ask the followers of Jesus, what are you? They wouldn't say Christian. They'd say, I'm a disciple. A disciple of Jesus, you know. We sometimes will say that now. We're a Christ follower. We're a disciple of Jesus. You know, I'm a disciple. But the disciples who called themselves disciples were first called Christians right here. Now, from this point forward, look throughout the New Testament. You're going to see that the word over and over again, disciple, disciple, disciple. Now, what's a disciple? Well, the nice thing is, too, even with our English, is the English word, disciple, means the same thing as the Greek word. The Greek word is mathetes, which simply means a learner, a pupil, an apprentice, an adherent, a follower. You know, it's just somebody who's following. A disciple is a person who says something like this: "Who's going to say, okay, I'm trying to make a decision. What would you do? And that's what I'll do. How would you handle this situation? Okay, that's how I'll handle it. I know how to respond to this person. How would you respond to them? See, they're having this relationship situation going on. How would you handle a relationship situation like this? Okay, that's what I'll do. That is discipleship. That's being a disciple. If you were married to my husband, if you were married to my wife, if you had these, what would you do? Okay, you know what? I'm going to do that. That's a disciple. Disciple is a person that's looking to somebody else to say, give me direction. Show me how to live my life. Teach me. And the answer before you even start or even ask the question, the answer is yes. You know, teach me how to do this. I want to know the answer. And once you tell me, absolutely yes. Now, what is it you think I should do? And that's different than a Christian, isn't it? I mean, not supposed to be. Christian, disciple. The word disciple is very uncomfortable. By the way, if some of you are thinking or hoping or afraid, if you're afraid, here it comes. From now on, we're not allowed to use the word Christian around here. We're going to have to call ourselves disciple. No, that's not going to happen. We're not doing that. But even that uneasiness, there's an example, you know. That's kind of weird. But the truth of it is, you know, here's some other examples. Just again, you find them throughout the New Testament. I'm just going to give you some of these. Acts 6:7. So the word of God spread. The number of, not Christians, disciples, see that? Number of disciples in Jerusalem increased rapidly. And then here's one about the Apostle Paul. This is pretty interesting. Now remember, Paul persecuted the church. He murdered. He put people in prison. He was trying to get rid of the church. And then he becomes a follower of Jesus. And so the people who were followers of Jesus didn't trust him because they were thinking he was just kind of trying to finagle his way in. You're just trying to get in here so that you can find out where we live and how you can attack us and kill us and put us in prison and so forth. So he decided, he's going to join the church. Acts 9:26. When he, Paul, came to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples. And he thought, that was a brand. No, that was actually what the people called themselves. Okay? And this isn't the 12 disciples. This is the apostles. That was the apostles, the 12. Okay? There were other references to disciples in the Bible in groups, more than just the 12. He's adding himself to the whole big group. But they were all afraid of him, not believing he was really a disciple. That's how they described themselves. And this is cool. This is cool. There were actually disciplelets. Women, now check this out, okay? Disciples and just, I made up that word. That's not really in the Bible, disciplelets. But they were disciples. Now, Acts 9:36. In Joppa, there was a disciple, or disciplelet, named Tabitha. So even women could be disciples. She was always doing good and helping the poor. So the point so far in this is that we can hide behind the word Christian. But if you look into the New Testament, ask the question, what were the people really about and how did they describe themselves? They referred to themselves and to each other as disciples. And that brings us then to this really frightening, disturbing also distinction. This question that we have to ask ourselves. And you're sitting here and you have to ask yourself this now. And look at this. You have to ask yourself, am I a disciple? Or am I just a Christian? Are we disciples or are we just Christians? And I'm not trying to minimize the significance of being a Christian. I'm not trying to minimize that at all. I think you're catching the distinction I'm making. Are you a disciple of Jesus or just a Christian? Are you a follower? Is your answer yes, Jesus? It doesn't matter what the question is. The answer is yes. I'm going to follow you. Or are you just, yeah, I've got the Christian, you know, I looked in them. I checked out some religions. I looked in. This seems to really make the most sense. So I'll pick that. This is disturbing, isn't it? So as we close in on our first session, hopefully you come back next week, I want to take you to a moment in the time of Jesus where he speaks directly to people who want to be his disciples, and he gives them kind of a talk. You know, okay, if you're going to be a disciple, not just a Christian, here's the bottom line. If you don't hear anything else I say, you know, do anything else I do, here are your specific marching order. That's, you know, Jesus is giving them this talk. Now, if you grew up in church, I want to warn you. What I'm about to read, you've probably read 1,000 times, okay? This isn't like, oh, wow, the pastor showed us a passage I've never seen before. This is amazing. It's not one of those. Sorry. I don't want to disappoint you. But if we had gotten this right, I want you to understand this. If we had just gotten this part right, if we had decided, you know, forget everything else, but if we had just gotten this part right, you could, looking back through history, there probably wouldn't have been a First World War. There certainly wouldn't have been a Second World War. There wouldn't have been a Civil War in this country. Slavery would have been put to rest long, long before it was. And there would have been no, you know, need for a civil rights movement, honestly, in this country. So you're thinking, what in the world are you talking about? If the followers of Jesus had actually followed, I'm not, you know what, set aside the Ten Commandments, set aside everything else, all this other, you know, the whole New Testament. If we had just taken this one teaching, and don't set aside the New Testament and Ten Commandments, but focusing on this, if we had just done this, this world and our nation in particular would be a different and better place. See, here's what happens. Jesus is at the end of his ministry in this, we're going to look at. He's about to have the last Passover feast with the guys and with his Jewish followers and the apostles. Judas has already left to go, has already left to betray him. So Jesus realizes, man, before I leave and go through the crucifixion and death, burial, and ascension, I need to run through some things with these guys. So I realized, before I do that, I've got to go through. Remember, so some of you have kids that have gone off to college, you know, and you're all trying to give them the last little couple of things you want to tell them, you know what I mean? So I was like, okay, kids, remember, dad says, well, there are three. Okay, your mom says there's four. Okay, remember these four. No, there's actually five. Okay, so remember these six things when you, right? Just like all these things you want them. Don't forget. Don't ever forget these things. It's like that. And Jesus has given them some instructions. He says, I don't want you to forget these things. These are things I don't want you to forget. Soon later after that, he gives us the communion, the Lord's Supper. Don't forget. So, but Jesus says, okay, here it is. Here's the one thing you've got to get right. Okay? These guys are all ears. You've got to get this right, guys. Listen up. He says, my children. That was a very endearing statement, by the way. That was like, you know, I will be with you only a little while longer. In other words, lean in. We're running out of time. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now. Where I am going, you cannot come. Now, when he says you cannot come, Peter, who's sitting there, perks up. It's like, wait. What do you mean we can't come? Wherever you go, we go. I mean, we're disciples. What do you mean? What do you mean you're going some? Where are you? You know, what's going on? What do you mean? Does Andrew get to go? Because if Andrew get to go, I get to go. Because I mean, seriously, are the rest of you going and I'm being left out? Peter. Peter. I love him. So, you know, he's just obsessed. You know, you're going somewhere we can't go. Oh, I want to go. Panic. Then Jesus moves on. He says, a new commandment I give you. Now, the little Greek word new can mean unusual or strange or not just like brand spanking new, like we think of, you know, brand new off the lot. It can also mean impractical. You never thought of this before. This is what new can mean here in this Greek text. A new commandment I give you. And the thing is, most of you know it's coming. It's not like dun, 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 right? No dramatic music here. Here we go. Wasn't really that new on the surface. Okay, guys, lean in. You guys, you're my guys. We had 12, and now we're down to 11. And before we lose any more of you, I need to run this through with you, okay? A new command. I'm giving you a new command. You ready? Love one another. John's right in this. And I mean, he may have thought, wait. What did he say? I'm listening for something new. That's not new. I read that in the Old Testament. Love one another. I mean, we've heard that. In fact, I've heard Jesus say this before. What's so new about it? He says, love one another. A new commandment I give you, love one another. Jesus then elaborates. He says, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. So Jesus says, that's what I want you guys to do. Can you imagine? I don't know, we don't have the whole conversation perhaps, but I can kind of picture Jesus even saying, as I have loved you, and them kind of wondering. He says, you know, Matthew, remember when we met? Do you remember what you were doing? Yeah, that's right. You were tax collecting. I know you were a traitor, and the people hated you. And remember, everybody hated you. Peter, remember the day we met Matthew? Remember how you guys didn't even want to talk to him? You guys didn't even want to hang out with him. He said he was a traitor. He's a tax collector. And remember when we met Matthew? John, you remember then where we went? Yeah, we went to Matthew's house. I was warned by my mother never to go to a tax collector's house, you know. And when we got there, there's a whole bunch of tax collector people with them. So my mama says, don't you hang around with those people. And there we were with you right in the middle of all that. Remember the conflict between all of you guys and Matthew? Now remember, how did we manage that? How did I manage that? Remember how I loved Matthew? Okay. That's what I want you guys to do to each other. That's how I want you guys to love each other. I want you to love each other that way. Nathaniel, remember that first day we met, Nathaniel? In fact, the rest of you guys don't know this side story, but his brother Philip here, you know, he's all excited. He runs to go tell his brother, come on, Nathaniel, we found the Messiah. It's great. You should come and see him. He's from Nazareth and everything. And Nathaniel goes, wait. Nazareth? Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Nathaniel, you dissed on my whole family. Right there to Phil. I mean, right? But how did I treat you? You put my town down, and right? Now, we don't have a record of Jesus saying this, but he's reminding them, I'm not just saying, just love. Oh, kumbaya, hold hands, let's get in a circle. No, he's saying love as I loved you guys, each of you individually. That's how I want you to love each other. You know, I said to you, Nathaniel, even though you said, could anything good come? I said, come, follow me. You're one of my guys, and that's how I want you to treat each other. And guys, remember the day you got freaked out because I started talking about how my blood, you know, drinking my blood and eating my flesh and all of that? You remember John 6? And it seemed so strange that people were getting up and they were leaving and people were all offended and everything and everybody else. And you remember that day? Every single one of you, I know I could read your mind, every single one of you wanted to leave me. I know you were in a conflict. I know you wanted to fade into the crowd and be done with me, and I knew that. Remember? But remember how I treated you? Remember how I accepted you? Remember how I forgave you? Even though you were about to betray me? I want you to love one another. That's what I want to characterize your relationship with each other, as followers of me. Then Jesus said this, verse 35, by this one dynamic, this one relational breakthrough, he says, by this everyone will know that you are my disciples. Christian? Hey, we can all be Christian. Love each other the way that Jesus loved those guys. Okay, now that's like a whole different subset we're talking about. That's a whole another smaller category, you know. I don't know how to get around that or defend that. When you say disciple, I can't really put a lot of twists on it. It's just so clear. And then just in case they miss it, he goes on and says, you'll know. Everyone will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. So I know most of you would say, hey, I'm a Christian or whatever, but are you a disciple? Now, here's my first part of the passage. This is huge. This is my favorite section. Jesus is saying, okay, it's not how much you know or where you go to synagogue on Saturday. It's not, you know, all that. The one thing, the litmus test, the bottom line, the defining characteristic of the people that follow me, it isn't how much you know. It's not how loud you sing. It's not how long you pray. It's going to be all about if you love one another. This is gigantic. I mean, intense, huh? And then Peter raises his hands. Okay, Pete. Simon asks him, Lord, where are you going? Peter, did you miss all that section? Where are you going? He's like, okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, love. Okay, got that, you know. And he's a little bit like some of us guys, you know. Yeah, okay, all right, love. Great. But where in the world are you going? I'd like to know where you're going because I want to go with you. It's like, you know, Peter, did you just miss the whole point of this lesson? And Peter's saying, yeah, no, I'm with you. I gotcha. I'm with you. In fact, I'm going to live this out because I'm willing to die for you and I want to be seen with you and I want to be there. And when you go, I want to go too. I don't want to be left behind and whatever it is, put me on your right hand or your left hand or front or behind, do whatever you want, but I'm going with you. And later Jesus said, Peter, a middle school girl is going to make you fall over and deny me. You know, this little girl's going to ask you, and you're going to be all intimidated. So, Peter, it's like this. Peter's like, I'm willing to die for you. No, Peter, you will eventually, but nah, you're not going to now. And Jesus, in a sense, was saying, Peter, I don't want you to die for me. Peter, I don't even want you to follow me. Because, Peter, I don't want you to go where I'm going. I want to do something way more difficult than all of that. What could be more difficult than that? I want you to love each other. I want you to love these guys for the rest of your life. I want you to love them in such a way that people from the outside look at your relationships and the way you love each other, and I want them to be drawn to the edge of your community and to say, wow, look how they love each other. And I want to create a community of people that are defined and characterized by that kind of unconditional, generous, compassionate, ridiculous kind of love, you know, the who would do that kind of love. I want people on the outside to just come to the edge, you know, unafraid that you're going to ask them to do something or drag them into something or make them sign up for something or accuse them of something, and I want them just to be able to watch you and go, wow, look at how the men in that church treat the women with such honor. Look at how the women treat the men. Look how they treat their widows. Wow. Look what they do for their sick people. This is incredible. Look at how they honor children. This is in this culture. Look how those masters treat those slaves. Jesus, I want them to come and say, wow, look at how those slaves respond to the masters. Look at the relationship. Look at how they manage their money. They do it so different than everybody else. Look at how they respond to persecution. Not by retaliation. They love. It's like they don't even fear death or something. Look at them. Look at them love. Jesus says, I want you to go and I want you to build communities. You see this in Acts happening. They're going to grow and grow, and people from the outside are going to be drawn in, and they may think, I don't want to become one of those. I don't want to get all weird and Jesus freakish and all that, but man, look how they love each other. I'd hired one. I'd work for one. Sure like to have one as a neighbor. I know they'd be watching out. I don't know if I want to be one, but sure great to have around. Look how they love. You see, these followers of Jesus were disciples, and they were different, you know, generous to a fault. And they're willing to do the right thing, even though it costs them financially, you know. I don't know, you know, where you are, but, you know, can you just imagine, even in your community, even where you work or in your neighborhood, if we got just one thing right, can you know? Forget Christian in a sense. Disciple. We're going to be disciples. And what we're going to do is we're going to do what Jesus told the disciples to do. The one thing, he says, I want to love people. I want to love people around me. I just want to be loving. And hey, you know where I start? He said, love each other. He didn't say, okay, you got this planet. Go out and love everybody. He said, start right here. Start right where you are, guys. He says, just love each other. How I've been loving to you when we've been walking around, we've been going around and everything. I want you to love each other that way. Essentially, how cool would it be to have a big rebranding campaign of disciple? And what do? We love. Can you imagine this just for a minute? Just in terms of your family. Let's say for the next 3 months, you just decided, you know what, I'm not going to respond to you know, negatively according to how I get responded to. I'm just going to express love. I'm going to be a follower of Jesus. I'm going to be a disciple, and I'm just going to just love. I don't care if, you know, I don't care if it doesn't work out or whatever. I mean, can you imagine where I would be? I'm going to just take a period of time, and I'm just going to love. You know, unconditionally, like Jesus loved those guys. Can you imagine where our world would be if we had just gotten this one right? Jesus knew that. Jesus said, hey, there's tons of things. I'm not disregarding any other instructions Jesus gave. I'm not disregarding anything else in the Bible. I hope you know me well enough to know that. But I'm thinking if we had got this one thing right, this is how they're going to know. The world's not going to know we're Christians because of our theology. They may eventually ask us about it, but that's not how they're going to know. Because a lot of smart people know good theology. A lot of non-Christians know good theology. It's not how long you pray. It's not how loud you preach. Not whatever. Now, we're going to jump to a different subject next week. But before we leave today, I want to just say a couple of things. One, if you're a follower of Jesus, just try this. Try it for a week, okay? I said 3 months, 6 months. Just go for a week, right? Just try this. Listen, I know your husband's a mess. I know your wife's a wreck. I know your teenagers are teenagers. I know your parents haven't had an original thought since 1960 or 70 or whatever. I realize you're surrounded by idiots and you're the only well-balanced person in your whole entire community. I got that. I know. All right. But what would it look like if I just loved? What would it look like in my household if I just loved the way Jesus loved? You know, doesn't matter what everybody else, what their response is to me, you know, just to love the way, you know. And I'm not trying to say, oh, good, you're going to cure a bunch of problems. You know, it doesn't mean you're going to get love back. I remember Jesus loved this way, and look what happened to him, right? They crucified him, a supreme example of love. So get ready. It's not just going to all come back to you. It's not going to be like, David, next week you're not going to come. Oh, I did this, what you said last week, and my husband. He's completely changed. Okay? Probably not going to happen. But that's not what Jesus was saying. See, if it was easy, then he wouldn't even have to say this. This is better than Christian. This is being a disciple. This is what it means to follow Jesus. This is how an entire empire was toppled without an army, without raising a sword or a shield. But that's coming up next time. Second of all, of those of you we're here because of your experience, because of your situation, because of what's happened to you in your past. You may think that Christians are unkind and unloving and narrow-minded and homophobic and greedy and judgmental and, you know, hope everybody goes to hell and all that. I want to say something. If I had experienced some of what you've experienced, okay, I'd probably feel the same way. I don't blame you or judge you or anything. I know people who have had horrible experiences. I don't judge you, but here's my hope for you. No one will probably ever be able to redefine Christian for you in such a way that you're like, okay, yeah, I want to be one of those. That's not even the goal. But I just hope with all that you've seen and experienced and all the hesitation to ever embrace anything Christian, I hope that you won't miss Jesus. Because Jesus, my Savior, and the Savior of many of you here, puts us all on common ground. We all start the same. The thing that you hate about me and the thing you hate about Christians or whatever, That's it. We all fall short. Not just of God's standards. I fall short of my own standard. God's perfect, and I fall short of my own standard. Can you imagine the standard I fall short of God? Absolutely, I fall. I'm not even consistent with what I believe. So, and you're not consistent with what you believe either. That's okay. So here's common ground, whether you're Christian or not, to where you've got to figure out what to do with all of our failure, what to do with our sin. What do we do with all of that crud, that disappointment, that wrong in our life? What do we do with that? And I would hate the fact that Christianity has been so poorly represented to you and that you'd miss Jesus and what he's done for you. That would break my heart. I hope you don't. Let's bow.